David Simpson, who's going to be on the show tonight at the bottom of the hour, quite frankly, in a couple of minutes, and I believe he's already on hold.
I believe he is.
And he is a 14-year veteran of the financial services industry. He studied the industry from inside of Prudential and the mutual fund store and boutique broker-dealers. He's also brought forward his legal training. He's a recovering attorney. So he has knowledge of the history to bear on this topic. And quite frankly, he's offering up something that's counterintuitive and counter, this is what I love, countercultural to, you know, to his clients, which I think is just remarkable. And as I said, you know, David has done seminars with Mike Church. He's been on the Mike Church show, and I reached out to him, you know, oh, I don't know, probably a month and a half ago, because I'd listened to him on Mike Church and was very, very struck with his straightforward approach to some of these issues that we've talked about. And quite frankly, we'll talk about it tonight. And one of them is financial sanity. And I would have everybody, if I could, stand up and put their hands together, but that's not the case. So let's all welcome Mr. David Simpson to the Dave Campbell Show.
Hello, Dave.
Hip, hip, hooray.
Hey,
hip, hip,
David,
hooray.
How are you doing?
Oh, what a nice welcome. I like it. Very nice.
Yeah, I know. Really, I tried to get everybody up on their feet with their hands together, David, but, you know, sometimes it's difficult.
Well, let me ask you from the outset, is it okay if I say y'all every now and then? You know, I'm from Louisiana,
I would. It would warm my heart for you to say y'all. I lived in Baton Rouge for a year and absolutely loved the place, and came within a hair's breadth of moving there, and I still cherish the memories that I have from Louisiana. So you can say y'all however much you want.
Well, I don't always, but every now and then they'll slip out and people will say, okay, where are you from? So I want to know that from the front end.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, you have a fabulous blog going on, and I've got it up. I put it up on my Facebook page and everything. But let's talk about your recent article in February about financial sanity.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was the. I actually if I remember right, I borrowed something from a book that I read. I'm getting into reading a lot of old literature, you know, because none of this stuff is new. But what I always find remarkable is the guys who saw it from the very beginning, you know. And I like the guys who were smart enough to figure it out early on, because I feel like I can learn a lot from them. And so I came across this, actually a Catholic priest who had become kind of a popular character, you know. I think he did radio and everything else to challenge FDR and all this kind of stuff. But he wrote a book called Money, Questions and Answers, and I read it. And one of the chapters just struck me. It was called Effects of a Dishonest Money System, and I believe that's the one you're talking about. And so
I was going to say, just for everybody that we're talking about is Charles Coughlin. Who wrote this book in 1935 and was going head to head with FDR on a lot of the New Deal issues.
That's right. And he put this chapter in there called Effects of a Dishonest Money System, and there was, I don't know, I think what 15 principles that of what's going to happen if you continue with a dishonest money system. And every one of them has come true. Every one of them is in place in our society, and it just I hardly even commented on that blog. I just made a few introductory comments and then let Father Coughlin speak for himself. But very rarely, today anyway, very rarely do you hear someone call our money system dishonest. Everyone just assumes that it's the way things are done. And I've been trying to say for years, and I've been trying to convince people that we are all involved in a major a charade going on, and it's basically just a systematic theft from the working people to the government, and there's no way out. They've got legal tender laws that make sure we can't use any type of else, any kind of other money. They've got the Federal Reserve, which has all the banks in their back pocket. Essentially, we're the pawns, and they're the kings.
You know what's interesting, David, is, you know, when we were talking, you know, offline in the other day, I'm rereading for about the third time John Pugsley's book, The Alpha Strategy. And,
right. You
know, he's got, in his introduction, he starts right out with the problem and, you know, defines it from Frederick, you know, Bastiat, you know, frankly, dear public, you're being robbed. This
yes.
may be put crudely, but at the least it's clear. And the first chapter is the sting. You know, so that ought to kind of set everything up right there.
Yeah, I read Bastiat actually when I was a kid, like 13, 14 years old, and he used the term legal plunder. And I don't
right.
know if that's why I went into the law to kind of find out what legal plunder was, but that is what it is. It's just a systematic process by which they steal, and when I say they, I'm talking about the government, of course, is in collusion with the banks. That's the two major players.
Right.
But they systematically steal, but they do it under color of law. It's okay to steal because they're doing wonderful things with our money, right?
I
think that's the principle. And so we're supposed to all be happy because we're getting services for these great things that we're paying for.
You know, and just to kind of go through just a few of these things. The effect of a dishonest monetary system is private individuals will coin money for their own personal gain. Corporations organized for production such as automobiles, steels, and textiles will be under the domination of the private money creators. Now,
if that
isn't the truth, I mean, anybody can look at what's going on right now and you know, that's true. The government itself will be dominated by the money plutocrats. And this is what I love. The press, dependent upon advertising received from banker-dominated corporations and commercial houses, will continue to deceive people.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is huge, and that's why, you know, alternative media like your show, Dave, and Mike Church's show, anything like this is so important. We have to do an end run around the mainstream media because they're not going to report this, not just because they don't think it's important or because they think it's not a good story or it's not sensational enough. That's not it at all. It's that they're not going to stop the hand that feeds them. And so it's essentially a self-preservation tactic, and they're going to be right in the back pocket of the guys who pay them the most advertising dollars.
No, absolutely. You know, and the father goes on to say an uninformed citizenry. And this is the part that really, you know, and you and I talked about this. This is the part that really troubles me, David, is the uninformed citizenry. I don't
yeah.
know. I would love to tell somebody how to go out and become informed, but they just don't seem to be motivated to do it.
And well, it's motivation, and you know, we again when we talk, you know, there's a lot of things. It requires a lot of hard work. You know, the hardest work we do, anybody does, any human does, is between their ears. Most people don't believe that, you know, and don't get me wrong, I understand. I'm not trying to belittle physical laborers because that's hard work too. But truly, the hardest work we do is between our ears, whether we see the world as it is or whether we don't. You know, there's a definition of truth, conformity of mind to reality, you know, and that takes a lot of work to conform our minds to reality. And what some people have chosen to do instead is they say, well, you know what, it's not my reality if I don't choose it. I don't have to choose it. I can sit inside and, you know, drink a beer, or I can, you know, watch a bunch of movies or television shows. I can become addicted to something, whatever, and the sum total of it is that I don't have to accept personal responsibility. And I think that's what's going on. And so, yes, but you know, it isn't all their fault. When I say the average Joe out there, I mean, let's face it, they've been carpet bombed with propaganda for 40, 50 years, and they had a horrible educational process that, you know, that they went through. So they got a lot of things working against them to be informed.
Well, you know, that's interesting because Pugsley points out that economics is not like trying to study calculus or quantum physics or anything else. It's pretty straightforward, right? That you know, wealth is created by effort, and you know, I don't understand why they've tried to make this damn thing so complex, David.
Well, that's funny. I mean, you know, they call it the dismal science for a reason, I think. And I actually like economics a good bit. And I guess in the theoretical realm, it's not quite that straightforward. You know, there are several schools, and they all fight it out as to who actually has the right understanding of reality. But, yeah, when you boil it down to simple, you know, brass tacks here, you got to produce and you got to save to have an economy. And if you don't produce and you don't save, you won't have an economy. Yes, it's pretty simple. You know, if you, like I said, if you want to start getting to theoretical realms, it gets a little bit more complicated. I had a client of mine tell me a joke one time. He said, an economics professor was, you know, had his normal freshman class, and one of the students goes to the library and says, you know, wants to check out one of his old tests. And so he does, and he studies this old test, thinking it'll help him on the current exam. And then when he goes to take the current exam, he realizes that he actually got the current test from the library. And so he's feeling really guilty because, you know, he knows all the answers because he had the test 3 or 4 days ahead of time. So he, you know, he finishes his exam. He goes up there and he says, Professor, I got to confess something. I went to the library to pick up an old test, and apparently I got the exact one, you know, you're giving this year. I'm sorry. What do I do? He says, oh, that's no problem. He's like, what do you mean? He goes, well, the questions are the same every year. Well, how does that work, Professor? He says, oh, the answers just changed. You know, so that's the economist of today, right? We never know what they're going to say. It's just whatever they come up with.
No, absolutely. And I think we see that almost on a daily basis, David, is, you know, the unemployment numbers. I mean, they keep fiddling with the statistics to where I don't think anybody at any given point really understands what in the hell's going on. They keep fiddling with, you know, CPI. Well, yeah, the CPI, yeah. All of the numbers. And, you know, one of the things that I found interesting was this whole thing with the U.S. banks asked, you know, for Basel III rules, you know, where Geithner and everybody, you know, they're playing with the, you know, the IMF and everything else. It just seems to, you know, I think it's just overwhelming people, all of the stuff that's going on.
Right. I would tend to agree, and I think a lot of our, even the, if we want to talk about the, we're talking about uninformed citizenry, even the informed citizenry, I find kind of striking at the wrong nail a lot of times. You know, they are focusing on these very macro problems, you know, whether it be governmental or economic or anything else. Let's, you know, they always want to talk about the presidential election or, right. You know, the latest bill through Congress or the latest UN treaty or something. And while I find all those things, of course, very problematic and they are serious issues, there's virtually nothing we can do about them.
Right.
You know, so you know, trying to focus on the local level seems much more important. And so I always tell people, look, you know, you can worry about that, or you can start producing locally and trying to find some you know, compatriots that you can start a little private relationship with, where you're going to have a little personal economy going on when all things go to hell. Or you can try to change the IMF, but I don't think you're going to. You know, I really do think we need to focus on the small, focus on the local. It's where we can make the biggest difference. And then, you know, on the larger issues, you know, we got to hope that enough people start making a change to where those larger issues change, just because the mass of people have changed.
Well, are you seeing any kind of a change at all? I know at one point, you know, the rate of savings was going up, and I'm reaching back into my memory banks here during the last downturn, but it seemed like, you know, the savings numbers were going up, and then, you know, of course, everybody's lauding that, you know, everybody's going out and buying things again.
And I'm
just wondering, because I think what is worrisome is people for some reason don't have the same discipline or the same thought process that our parents had, because they haven't struggled through a world war where things were rationed. They haven't struggled through a depression where there were bread lines. I mean, we're in a deep depression, or what I would consider a pretty significant depression right now, but it doesn't elude the same pictures as the black and white bread lines that you saw in the 30s.
No, Dave, I think you're absolutely right. You make a great point. I mean, there is no discipline at all, or very, very little. I think people are starting to see. I do see, if you ask me what I see on the street, yeah, I am seeing a somewhat of a resurgence of personal responsibility and just saying, you know, I got to do my own work here, and I've got to keep my family protected. I do see that in a very incipient stage, but that being said, the greater cause that you're talking about, this greater deficiency of lack of discipline, you know, it goes way back. I always kind of described literally my entire lifetime. I'll be 48 this year, so probably my entire lifetime, I think we've been a playboy society. We're living on the earnings and the savings and the trust fund of the other generation, the older generation, my parents and their parents. They were very frugal. My dad was born right in the Depression, 33. They were frugal. They were saving conscious, and they saved, and they left a large estate, if you will. And this generation, my generation, and everyone since, has basically said, I'm going to be just crazy and spend like there's no tomorrow. And then you add on to that what the press tells us. I mean, you've heard these news stories. I mean, we get them in New Orleans all the time because New Orleans is, you know, this big port city and this big tourist city. We're constantly hearing, I'll give you the good example right now. Final Four is coming here, on next weekend.
Right.
Oh, what a great economic impact. And all
what
it
a
is
boom.
Is
what a boom.
Right. And all it is what you said earlier, passing that $100 around, right? No one's actually earning anything. No one's producing anything. And no one's saving anything. We're all just trading the same $100 around the table. And somehow or another, that's supposedly an economy. And what's really damning about the whole thing is they tell us that if you spend, you're helping the economy.
Right.
I tell people in my office all the time, I say, what does the word economical mean? And they say saving. And I go, okay, then why does economy mean spending? So if economical generally means just try to be cost conscious and save, then economy has to mean the same thing.
You know, exactly. I mean, you have parents, and everybody that are small business owners that have struggled for Lord knows the last 3.5 years. And, you know, we've tightened the belt to the point where, you know, we can't hardly breathe anymore. And then you see all of this other silliness. And just as a sidebar issue, you know, one of the interesting things that I've been hearing is, you know, the whole Supreme Court arguments over the last 3 days and everything else. And I was just sitting there thinking on my way home tonight, the cost that we have borne based on this entire piece of legislation, if it gets pitched in June, you know, that's 2.5 years of God knows how many czars, how many regulations, how many insurance companies had jacked up people's rates and everything else because they were trying to mitigate what was coming.
Right.
And, you know, everything gets pitched in June. It's just... And nobody's talking about it. You know, it's just the constitutional piece of it. But I'm sitting there going, you know, there's been a hell of a lot of money spent over the, you know, we have a Congress that has gone 3.5 years without developing a budget. We have all of these czars that we have hired to, along with Sibelius, to manage all of this crap. And now all of a sudden, if it gets pitched, then what? It's going to kind of like everybody's, you know, pants are around their ankles, and they're not going to know, you know, what to do. It's going to be just – it's going to almost be comical to sit there and watch this thing.
But you know the real sad thing about that, and you're right. I mean, but the real sad thing is the people who were happy about the bill because it gave them work to do. You know, like I get to make up a new flyer that talks about all the different programs that people can subscribe to, or I'm going to make up a new whatever. You know how I'm talking about. It's crazy. It really is. I get these things. Of course, I'm in insurance and finance, so I get these things, and it makes my blood boil. But I have to look at them, and it goes, you know, how the new healthcare law is going to impact you and your clients, you know. And I'm thinking, oh, for God's sakes, man, you know. But there's a whole cadre of people who are just sucking it up. They love it.
Oh yeah, yeah. And quite frankly, and we talked about this earlier in the show. I mean, they're already starting to spin. The defeat and how positive that's going to be. And I'm sitting there going, you guys have just wasted, you know, 2.5-3 years of our country's existence on this singular piece of legislation.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden you're spinning it the other direction, where if the chief justices throw this in the trash can, which, knock on wood, they do, then what? What the hell have you done for the last 3.5 years?
And you know, Dave, you know the worst one of all is those people, and you know they're out there, who said, I'm not going to get insured because I'm going to wait for my free care.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for my free care.
Yeah. You know, they're going to walk through the lines in Detroit, you know, like they did, you know, and it's, well, Obama's going to give me something.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, hon? You know, Obama's not going to give you anything because it was determined unconstitutional. And I just saw on Drudge today where the IRS is asking for $300 million to hire God knows how many agents to police Obamacare.
Well, that about sums it up, you know. If you can't beat them, whip them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's
yeah, you know, exactly. Okay, all right. So let's shift gears a little bit. For those out there, you're listening to the Dave Campbell Show. If you'd like to join this great conversation with Mr. David Simpson from the Fiscal Fitness Company, you can call us at 1-877-572-1895. We'd love to hear from you. It's a great conversation. Let's talk about the coming inflation, because you and I both know. You know, I lived through the Carter years, which was inflation was there. Nobody really wanted to talk about it. We had the gas lines and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I got to believe what Geithner's doing right now. We haven't even seen what's going to come down the road yet.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the you know, the Austrian school, which I'm about, you know, 87% Austrian, I guess, which is, you know, the von Mises Institute out of Auburn, Alabama. I think they have the best hand on the pulse of real money issues. And one of my blogs, in fact, my most recent blog is about the inflation issue. It was actually coming from a different group, but they follow the Mises guys also. But you know, they're called the Casey Report, Doug Casey. You know, inflation, the way I learned it and the way the Austrians describe it, and I think the way most people who, like I said, kind of understand the finance really, really describe it, it's an increase in money supply without a related increase in products and services. So
right.
Essentially, if you increase the money supply, all the dollars lose value because they're chasing the same amount of goods and services. Well, to me, I mean, unless I'm missing something, you know, unless there's about 8,000 factories in America that I'm not aware of, or 400 million people saving a lot more money that I'm not aware of, we have not had any production and any service increases, but we've had an enormous amount of monetary increase. So to me, the inflation is already in the game. I mean, we can't escape that reality. I mean, I know the modern media, I know the modern American will think inflation only means an increase in prices, but that's actually just a symptom. Once you have put out more currency without a corresponding increase in product and service, then you're going to get inflation. You're going to have rising prices. And so the real question from people like me and the guys that I talk to is, why hasn't it really sunk in yet? The other day on the phone, you were telling me, I forgot what you told me the percentage increase in sugar was, but it was pretty
exorbitant. It's almost 140%, David.
Okay, so we actually have seen inflation, but they're just not telling us.
Fuel
is up, sugar is up. I'm sure the CPI number is still down, but the CPI number is always down because whenever the government gets a bad number, they throw things out. Like they'll say, oh, we're not going to use fuel this time, or oh, we won't use housing this time.
Right.
To me, the CPI number is a complete joke. But essentially, I know that inflation is already there. They've already blown the balloon up with a bunch of money. The question is when is it going to pop? And my latest blog, talking about this Casey report, says that, hey, it could very easily be in 2 years, 2014.
Right.
And he has some historical evidence he uses to base that. But he says that every time we've had massive inflation, it's always been 2 years before a very benign inflation, which they're reporting now, 3.4, 3.5?
It's something silly. It doesn't reflect reality at all, David.
No. And so this guy is saying, and I'm with him. I think, I'm not saying 2014. I don't know when. I'd be surprised if it isn't next month. But I think a fourfold increase in inflation. So we're talking 17, 18, 20%. I mean,
right.
What does that do to your 401k?
Oh yeah, yeah. Exactly. And it's interesting. And obviously, there's not that many people really. I don't think have really started to understand, the commodity markets, the hard currency, the copper, the oil, the gold, the silver,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I don't think people are. I think they're still buying the aphrodisiac that the media and the government and everybody else has injected it in their arm. They still have the saline bag hanging off the cart, and the IV in their arm. And, it's like I told you the other day, that's the reason why I shifted my bumper music to Comfortably Numb is because nobody's paying attention to this crap.
Well, I was surprised. I actually got online today. I was just doing some, one of the things I do for my client base is I offer them to organize silver buys. I periodically see, after years of telling my clients to buy intrinsic worth items and they never would, I finally made them do it by buying it for them.
There you go.
I mean, sometimes the only thing you can do is make somebody,
Yep.
So we started buying silver a few years ago, and we do it as a joint effort. I would basically organize, get all my clients, and whoever kicked in some money, I'd buy them some silver from a mint. Well, I was looking at both silver prices because I'm thinking about doing another one this quarter for my clientele, and I was looking at silver prices, and I started looking at money, the whole money issue, because you remember if you saw my blog, it says in there that since 2008, just 3.5 years, they've had 168% increase in the money base. They've thrown out they basically doubled and a half over double and a half the amount of money that America had in circulation. Just unbelievable in 3.5 years.
Right.
So, like I said, so the inflation's already there. The question is, when are we going to see skyrocketing prices, and when is it going to hurt mom and pop? Because that's what's going to happen.
Right.
So I'm thinking, okay, maybe it is time to buy some silver because I think I need to up my client's intrinsic worth category that I have in my financial plan. And so I started looking at the money base. And, in 2006, I remember this happening, but I'd forgotten the year, but I recalled it today. In 2006, the Fed stopped reporting on M3, which is one of their calculations of how much money is in circulation. They just said, oh, that number's not important anymore. We're gonna stop talking about that one, okay?
There you go. There you go. I just love it. Yeah, I just love it.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that most people, we should get our shotguns and walk to Washington and say, okay, you're done. We're finished with you, right?
Yeah. You're out of here.
Right. But no, we're going to let them do that. So they just stopped reporting on it. Well, then I got onto, I don't even know how I got to this website, but this guy was showing these three or four different ways of calculating the money in circulation. And actually, the Von Mises Institute has one called Total Money Supply, TMS. And it's a pretty good gauge as to what the money, how much money is out there. So if you're ever looking for that kind of information, look up the Fed's M1 and M2, which are basically irrelevant, and then go look up Von Mises Institute's TMS, and you'll see what the real money supply is doing. But that also got me into this whole silver thing, and I'll just tell you some numbers real quick. You might be interested. Silver low over 10 years. So in the past 10 years, silver was down to $4.30 an ounce, okay? Just within 2 years, it spiked to $48. I don't have the whole number here. $48 and some change. I don't know the percent. Oh, 48.70. I think that's a thousand. I think that's over 1,000% increase.
It certainly is.
And so you tell me if we have inflation. And you know, if it takes, you know, silver doesn't change. It's an ounce of silver is never worth more or less. It's only the dollars that are worth more or less. If it takes $48 today and it took $4 10 years ago, there's something seriously wrong with your money. And we've all better get a handle on it and start finding ways out of this little nightmare.
Well, yeah, I would say you could start rolling it up with the Charmin, because that's about all it's really worth. You know what kind of intrigues me, and this is just a philosophical statement, David, is people, for some reason, don't understand, and I don't know how to make them understand, that that piece of paper is really just on good faith. And good faith, as you and I both know, comes and goes. And for some reason, I think the perception is that there's some intrinsic value behind that, you know, behind that piece of cloth with the green ink on it.
You know what's really strange too. There's a corollary to that, Dave. It's there's a state rep in Louisiana. I won't say his name. I'll just tell you what he said. A friend of mine and I were talking to the state rep and telling him, "Hey, you know, can you do something in the state legislature to fight back the Fed a little bit? Come on, let's get something at the local level and make some difference here."
Right.
And he actually said. I should put this in time frame. This was around the 2008 debacle. I mean, when the market just got slammed,
right?
And he said, "Oh well, the market's just, it's all emotion, and when people start feeling good again and start spending money again, it'll come right back. Y'all, you guys don't need to worry about all this stuff." You know what? I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, you really believe that if we all feel good, then everything's hunky-dory, but if we all feel bad, nothing, everything goes wrong? That's psychotic. Who says stuff like that? And this is a state legislator.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, David, we've got 535 individuals that sit on the Potomac that somehow or another don't have any kind of a grasp on reality either.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've heard the comments that, you know, people on unemployment are good for the economy. I still, when I hear that phrase, I have to scratch my head and go, "You're educated. You really said that?"
Yeah.
And
yeah. How about the? Well, if we get a weak dollar, it's going to help trade. If we get a high dollar, all these other stupid. You know, what we really need is a dollar that actually is worth something. Everyone knows it's worth something. And then we need to produce things that everyone wants to buy. And then we need to ship those things to people who buy them, hopefully with equally valid currencies. And then we'll all be happy. But that's not how they see things.
No, and I'm just wondering, because I keep seeing, and I know, I think it was last week possibly, I saw a note that Geithner said going back to the gold standard wouldn't help. And, you know, in going through your stuff and Pugsley's stuff and Bastiat's stuff, I'm sitting there going, "Well, why wouldn't it help?" Because, you know, for what I do for a living, we deal with baselines. And if you take everything back to a baseline and that paper is actually exchangeable for something that has intrinsic value, why wouldn't that start to stabilize things?
Yeah.
I know it takes away your ability to go out and fund whatever the hell you want to go do, but it was a curious statement to me, and it just kind of, obviously with the mainstream media, just kind of blew over everybody's head. So
yeah, well, the reality is that it takes away the ability to manipulate currency. That's what it really does.
Right.
And the government loves to manipulate currency. You know, they figured out a long time ago, and I guess we should have all kind of seen it coming, but none of us were smart enough to see it. You see, when they have to go and ask you, hey, Dave Campbell, I want to go fight a war in Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia and, I don't know, the other 125 we have going on around the world. We need some tax dollars. Go ahead, pay up. You're going to say, man, I don't really care about those wars. How about you bring the guys home, right?
Right.
So they really don't want to ask you for money. It's too cumbersome. It's too tedious. And then they have to convince you, and you're probably not going to agree to it because it's going to be too much. And so they said, you know what? We need a mechanism by which we don't have to do that. How do we get out of having to ask people for money? They say, well, I know. Let's steal it. Let's take it out the backside where they don't even know what's happening to them. I think it was John Maynard Keynes. I said this quote one time, and then someone said, oh, he never said that, or you're misquoting him, and I never went back and verified that he said it, but I believe it was Keynes who said that the process of inflation, not one in a million people will recognize what's going on. And so, in other words, the system that we live under, the Keynesian monetary system, was designed to pull the wool over people's eyes, and they won't know they're getting robbed. And like I said, I'm convinced that that's just what it is. It's plain and simple. We need to be very clear with people. We're in a faulty, well, as Father Coughlin would say, a dishonest money system. We're being stolen from, and the sooner we realize it and deal with it, the better.
No, I agree, and it's curious to me because, you know, I've made the comment on this show. I made the comment on my live radio show that the consuming public. You know, the people, the 50% of the people that are actually pulling the wagon, you know, God bless them because, you know, they're still pulling the wagon because the other 50% are sitting there eating popcorn, riding in the wagon. At some point that 50% is going to throw their hands up in the air and say, enough of this. You know, this is silly. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we talked the other day, and I told you that, you know, sometimes these things make me rather black inside. You know, I get that foreboding depression.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Have you ever been there, Dave? You sound like you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, no. You know, I was there this morning on my way in to talk to a client. I get the same way. I'm sitting there going, what in the hell is wrong with you? Come on. What in the hell? What do you you know, it's just to shift gears real quickly, it's like the whole incident that's going on in Florida, David. I'm going, you're the leader of the best, brightest country in the world, and you're bungling this. You know, you want to reach out and just go, what in the hell? If you had a kid, you'd take them behind the woodshed and explain to them what was going
on. Right.
You know?
You see, you're talking about the 50 people pulling, or if it's that many. I don't know. I hope it's still 50. But my thing is I literally just about every week say, you know what? I'm going to just become a farmer, you know. And
there you
because
go.
I think it's the best chance I have of surviving. I mean, you know, I'm starting to think, listen, if I can grow things, and by the way, I have a brown thumb, and I have little to zero experience as a farmer, so I'm going to be an abysmal failure, at least for the first couple of years as I you know, ply my trade.
Right.
But I think that would be the best use of my time at this juncture. I mean, I'm starting to think, you know what, adding to your point. At some point, people are going to throw their hands up in the air. But you know what? Some people aren't going to really throw them up in the air in the sense of, oh, I quit. They're going to throw them up in the air. I'm going somewhere else. I just don't want to do this. I'm not playing the game anymore.
Right. No, exactly. And, you know, and it's funny you mention that because I've often thought about going off and raising llamas and just being done with it because, you know, I can supply llamas to people that want to go up into the mountains for pack animals and do whatever I'm going to do and because this is insane.
I read these reports and I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure this Doug Casey I was talking about earlier. I put in my blog one of the articles from his newsletter, the Casey Report. I'm pretty sure Doug Casey has moved down to Venezuela or something. So you know, in other words, here's a financial guy, very astute, very on top of things, and putting out some great scoop, you know. But he said, hey, I'm not hanging around with a gun in
enough.
The street, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he's had enough. No, I completely understand. But I guess there's the problem I have, David, is there's so much bulldog in me. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if it comes from my Scottish heritage or whatever the hell it is. It's just like I'm in this tooth and nail until the end, you know.
Well, maybe it is a Scott thing because I'm a Scotsman myself, and so I guess that's part of it. You know, there's also a mix in here, and I know this is kind of strange. But your people think, well, gosh, you're talking so bad about the government, you're talking so bad about the banksters, you obviously hate America. Well, that's not true.
I love America. No, I do too.
I love America. I like you said earlier, it's the brightest, it's the best, it's the freest, it's the most wonderful experiment in human liberty ever tried, ever conceived of. It's if we could just get it back.
Oh no, and you know what's funny is I proposed a while back that we just get citizen legislators in there because it seems like every time we elect somebody, all they do is break the public trust anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just got to believe that the guys, like I said the other day, the guys that actually put calluses on their hands, the guys that go out and shrimp every day, the guys that actually honest to goodness do work, they understand what the hell's going on.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
you know, these guys understand. You know, the pampered individuals that we have sitting in Washington right now don't have a bloody ass clue about what's going on from one cocktail party to the other. And unfortunately, I just the way I feel about it, I honest to God feel, David, that my next door neighbor would be better than anybody sitting in Congress today.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
don't doubt that at all.
No,
well,
you know,
what's curious about the whole thing is they, talking about the legislators, right? They go to a party, they go to a ribbon cutting ceremony, they stand up on the floor and talk for 20 minutes or something, and they think that's work.
Right.
I mean, you and I would think that's a vacation, you know?
Right.
I would love to be able to just expound things on the House floor, and you know, for 20 minutes, and act like some big giant expert. You know, I mean, you know, how about the coddling they get, and all the, you know, all the pats on the back and everything else? But then, like I said, they go to some, you know, event where they got to cut a ribbon or whatever, and they get more pats on the back and more handshaking, and they think that's work. That's not work.
Well,
you know,
I mean, yeah, exactly. And you have this knucklehead today that showed up in a hoodie in the House chamber.
Yeah,
I mean, come on. Come on, you know, you're supposed to be a grown-up, you know? It's insulting, and, you know, I don't know what district Bobby Rush belongs to. I don't know who elected him. But if it were me, I'd be insulted that I elected somebody that took this entire issue to the level of showing up in the House chamber in a damn hooded sweatshirt over this entire incident. When you have an entire police force, an attorney general in the state of Florida, and everybody else that are doing their damnedest to come to some kind of understanding of what really did or did not happen.
Right.
And he shows up in the stupid hat. And then, of course, you know, Waters and everybody else makes their comments. It's disgusting. It's an insult.
Well,
it's an insult to the population.
And no respect. For anything.
No, absolutely not. I've got an interesting point here, and I just saw this. It's when Ronald Reagan took office, the U.S. national debt was less than $1 trillion.
Yes, it was.
Today, the U.S. national debt is over $15.2 trillion, and that was as of January. So
when I ran for office in Covington, I mean, in Louisiana, Our governor, Bobby Jindal, was actually my U.S. representative, and he got elected governor, so he left, and there was an open seat. And I wasn't going to run, but there was a lot of there seemed to be kind of a shift in the Republican Party. You know, Ron Paul was stirring some things up, and people were kind of getting liberty-minded. And I said, you know what? And of course, 2008 was going down, and so I was sitting in my office every day with clients, and I'm not kidding when I say this, were literally crying to me. David, what are we going to do? Because their 401k was just about wiped out. Their housing values were dropping off the charts.
Right.
And so And so I've always been kind of ticked off at the whole thing. Anyway, so there were three career politicians, these guys you're talking about who really have never really worked for a living.
Oh.
Three career guys running, and I tried finding somebody else to run that was of our mind, and no one would take me up on the offer. So on the last day of qualifying, I jumped in the race and went to all the forums and kind of ticked them off because I brought up economics each time. And they, of course, this is one of the most conservative districts in Louisiana, and all these guys are supposed conservatives. They're all Republicans, right? And they would say, I'm conservative, family values, whatever. And then the next words out of their mouth was, and when I go to Washington, I'm going to give you this plan and that plan and this plan and that plan. I was like, how are you going to pay for that, Jack? You know, whatever.
Right.
And they're like, what are you talking about? It's like, you're not a conservative. You don't get it. They don't want stuff. They want less stuff. That's the whole point of this operation.
Right.
And so I was really getting on them about it. I'm losing my train of thought about.
No, that's okay.
What you'd mentioned. I forgot where that was leading me. But anyway, there is no conservatism anymore. Oh, Ronald Reagan. I brought that
right.
topic up. I said, listen, in 1980, through 88, we finally broke the $1 trillion ceiling. And I said,
right.
And now I think when I was running, it was they were claiming it was, I think, 8 or 9 maybe or whatever. It's now 15.
Oh, yeah. And they make absolutely no – I mean, there's, you know, they're talking in trillions like it's $50 to fill your gas tank in your truck.
I know. And
I'm sitting there going, do you really understand what trillion is?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. Matter of fact, I had some people tell me during that time, they said, David, you've got to stop using the word trillion. It doesn't mean anything to anybody. I'm like,
no, it
well, it should.
Well, no, it absolutely should. But I think, you know, it's very much like, and I hate to use this analysis, but it's very much like the, numbing everybody to what violence is based on the media and Hollywood and everything else. They've had the ability to numb everybody that what billions and trillions mean is just kind of like coming and going.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
just like nothing.
Well, gentlemen,
I think we have a caller.
We have a caller that would like to get involved in the conversation. Is it all right
good.
For me to bring him online?
Oh, absolutely.
All righty. Here he comes. All right, sir. You're on with the Davids tonight. So what's your question?
Hold on one second. Let me turn this down now.
Okay.
He's listening, of course, online. And those of you that,
yes.
that are out there, you can also join the conversation at 877-572-1895. And that's toll-free. And you're listening to the Dave Campbell Show.
Now, go ahead.
I wanted to correct a couple of things. The quote from John Maynard Keynes, he actually made that quote, but he attributed it to Lenin.
Oh,
okay.
It was not, although no one has ever been able to find where Lenin made the quote, typical of Keynes, but it was a speech that he gave, and he did attribute the quote to Lenin.
Well, I'm glad you told me that, because like I said, someone told me that he didn't say that, and I'm like, well, I read it somewhere. I just couldn't remember where I'd read it, so I knew I had something
was,
in my data bank.
It was in a number of things that he quoted it more than once,
mm-hmm.
but he always attributed it to Vladimir Lenin, albeit that no one can find the evidence that Lenin said it. But, you know, it's Keynes.
Well, I would say based on the time frame and everything else, I'm surprised you find hardly anything based on Lenin.
That was that quote. The CPI, your number there, is automatically, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, why they handle that number, I don't know, but they whatever the number is, they reduce it by 1.1%.
Right. Well, they also throw things out. Like if they don't like how high rent's getting, they'll throw housing out. They have a quote unquote basket of goods, but that basket of goods is not static.
They change that under Hudonics, but whatever the number is they get, however they're calculating it, it's always reduced by 1.1%.
Yeah.
Third point on your silver, the high use of silver has been absorbed over this period of time and needs to be considered that 100 million ounces of silver went into ETFs. And two, we are trying to determine the total number of ounces of silver that were destroyed in the cruise missiles. There's 750 ounces of silver in a cruise missile.
How much? 750?
750 ounces.
750 per missile?
Per cruise missile. It is
holy
smoly. Unimaginable. Well, it has to be so accurate.
Right.
And because there was a situation of several of them going awry, they had to upgrade the electronics for some, there's some other reason to that. And in that, every time it's very difficult to get this information. Every time one of them blows up, you lost 750 ounces of silver. And we've launched a lot of them in the last 2 years.
But you're talking, wait a minute, you're talking almost 100, well, let's see.
I'm going to do the math for you now, Dave. I was looking that up myself.
I was just sitting there thinking, I'm trying to do it in my head, and I don't have my
about $250,000.
I was going to say $250,000, but I was thinking in terms of weight. That's what, like 80 pounds of silver?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's $24,000.
Troy pounds.
Right.
Yeah, it's $24,000 of silver for silver in the missile. So that's we know the missiles probably cost millions of dollars, but wow.
Right.
That's
a Phoenix missile costs $1.1 million. The average cruise missile is about $2.2 million. That's where a lot of your silver going. The third interesting number that you may not have is that when they talk about why we're not having this massive inflation due to the increase in the monetary policy.
Right.
Right.
They had to increase the M2 to make up for the unaccounted for $2 trillion that was in the hands of the cartels that they dumped back in the market.
Right. Yeah, well, that's what all of us who are speculating as to where the money. Well, of course, we know some of it's held in foreign hands, right? That's one big trick they've done is they've got
the
Chinese.
Well, there was as of 2000. Let's see, there was as of 2000. Let me get my date right. 2008. There was roughly $10 trillion in cash in the hands of different criminal activities outside the country.
Hmm.
That's directly from the FBI.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everyone speculates as to, how are they hiding it, at least the obvious massive inflation. And, of course, some of it was bought up in debt instruments by the Chinese and Indians. That's a very plausible explanation, having it in illegal activities. I also just think it's just pure manipulation. We've experienced a lot more inflation than 3% or 3.5 or 4. Just taking Dave's number on sugar.
4 is really 5.1.
Yeah.
Well, some people say that the real inflation is more along the lines of 10. That's why if you get to the spike in inflation, like the historical records show, these spikes over 2 years on occasion, we might be shooting to 17 or 24%.
I was going to suggest that you may be going in the wrong direction.
Well, yeah, there's a no.
You may be looking at the reverse.
Yeah, well,
simply because the number of people that are hanging on to and trying to readjust their lifestyle at this point is very large. Currently, credit card debt is being reduced faster than home mortgages.
Yeah.
And paid more timely.
Yeah, I just don't know. You know, I don't believe that consumer debt is going to be enough, even if we could wipe it out. It would be enough to offset the inflationary expansion of just the currency. I mean, there's just too much out there. So much of it, you know, if you go look, here's a good exercise to do. Go look at the growth of M2 or M3, whatever one you like. M3 is better probably, but they got rid of it in 2006. Go look at the growth of M2 and compare that line to the stock market. And there's a remarkable resemblance to how high the market climbed. It's basically the money just chasing stocks higher and higher and higher.
If you look at M2, not in traditional terms, but look at M2 per capita,
mm-hmm.
It's 10-1.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
like I said, no. But by the way, but you bring up a great point though. There is a very good argument for hyperinflation or massive deflation. Matter of fact, if you go look on the Casey Report's website, they're going to have two guys doing a debate which one they think is going to happen.
there you go.
It's amazing that we could actually dispute this. I always have kind of fallen out on the hyperinflation side because it's more destructive, and so they like it. Well, I don't know if it's more destructive. They're probably equally destructive. It's just easier.
35% of the people unemployed is pretty destructive.
Yeah. It's easy to bring about, and we have a lot more historical evidence for it, you know, like the Weimar Republic, whatever else, Nigeria, and all these other things. But the deflationary spiral is possible. I don't think we can wipe out that amount of debt. I don't know. I guess I tend towards the hyperinflation side, but no, you're right. It's definitely got an argument out there for both sides.
Well, if you look at the current value of the U.S. bond, if it wasn't for the offset with the Greeks having to raise capital, the people that had to insure the pay up on the Greek default swaps, you wouldn't have had this spike to, what is it, to 2.25, I think, today, of the bonds, simply because they had to get cash somewhere, and it was the only place they could get cash. I think you do have to consider that people are moving into other assets more cautiously and in some funny ways. In a study that I've just completed, it's interesting to note that while professional art dealers, galleries,
mm-hmm.
their revenue is down by half this year over 2007. But their unit sales are the same.
Well, I think
not
that you
people
could
are buying less, they're just willing to buy. They're just willing to.
Yeah.
They're moving.
Well, I have a very peculiar take on all this. I think you're right. You can see a deflationary. Matter of fact, the more likely cause of the deflationary spiral would be what you alluded to, which is government defaults. You know, the pigs, they call them, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. If we start seeing government defaults, the bailouts just won't work anymore. And then trying to collect revenue and money, that could suck up a lot of the dollars, therefore be deflationary. So that's a possibility. But I'm kind of with Dave on this. I think all this stuff is manipulated. And so I always look at, well, what are they trying to accomplish? What's the end game here? Well, you know, in other words, the banksters aren't stupid. They've got a lot of money invested in this whole shenanigans they've been pulling on us for 80-plus years. So what are they up to? And by the way, if they didn't want us to be scared, they wouldn't report it. They control the press, too. So why are we getting news reports about this now? And to me, the answer is they want to change our currency. They want this game to keep being played, but they've got to get us into a situation where we say, yes, we'll cry uncle, and we'll let you change our dollars into something else.
Right.
The SDRs, the Special Drawing Reserve or whatever. I think it's just a game. And I don't mean to be flippant. I'm not trying to say it's meaningless or it's not going to hurt people. It is going to hurt people. That's why it's so damnable. I just think it's being brought on to drive us to accept a change of monumental proportions that Americans normally would not accept.
Well, I think you really are right. Now that statement puts you dead in the right path, because if you look at the Basel Accords, if you look at the other stuff they throw out there, which, as you pointed out very correctly, that they don't have to do, there's no reason for some of this stuff to get the attention. They've got every conservative in the world worried about ICLEI and all of the Rio 20, Agenda 21 rules, which ultimately will be flushed down, while at the same time, the same exact group of people are busy taking over the banking system. And that's their goal. You're right. That's their goal. That's my last point.
Okay.
Have a good night, gentlemen. And remember to quote John Maynard Keynes correctly, please.
I will. Okay. I'll say Keynes to Lenin, two peas in a pod.
Yeah, really.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's gonna
good
go
night.
Over. That's gonna go over like a fart in church. You know.
Okay. Hey, that was a great call. That was a great caller, Dave.
Yeah, I know. Well, shoot, David, we've blown through an hour.
Hey, before you let him go,
you gotta
have him give us the information about how we can get in contact with him.
I was just gonna do that. You can reach, for those of you listening, you can reach out and correct me if I'm wrong here, David. It's www.tfrankfrankco.com.
That's right. TomFrankFrankCharlesOscar.com. It's my website. I just changed my domain server. So if you go there, it's very bare bones right now, but there is a contact form, and it will reach me that way. And plus, it can link you to my blog, and that's the best way to kind of figure out how my brain works. Just go read a little bit of the things I post there.
And and again, this is David Simpson, from the Fiscal Fitness Company. His office phone number, and should I give that out, Dave?
Yeah, do the toll-free number. It's 888-865-1816.
1816?
Correct.
Okay. And again, it's www.TomFrankFrankCharlieOscar.com.
That's right.
It's been an absolute pleasure, David, to spend the hour and go through this stuff. And I really, really thank you for spending the time with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure on my part, and I hope you guys have a wonderful time. By the way, you Arizonans are fighting hard over there against some other federal issues, so we need more of that too. So keep pushing your governor and your state to stand up against those guys over there on the East Coast.
No, we're absolutely doing it. I mean, we're kicking, fighting, and everything else. So it's going to be interesting. And stay in touch. Stay in touch with me. Stay in touch with the show and everything else. And maybe in a little bit, we can, if you so choose, we can have you back on the air and we can talk some more.
Love to do it, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, David.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.